Welcome to It's All Journalism. This is Megan Cloherty here today with co-producer Michael O'Connell. And today we have with us Trevor Noblick, who is the digital director for ONA. And I don't know if you've heard, Michael, but there's sort of a thing coming up. It's a conference of sorts.
I know my bank has heard because I've had to clear a few checks.
So the ONA annual conference is coming up in Chicago at the end of September. And Trevor's here to talk to us about what we can expect when we go. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, before we start, let's ONA, Online News Association, maybe there are some people who are listening to who don't know about that organization. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So ONA is the largest organization for digital journalists. We're also the fastest growing. So we're 2,300 members strong, and our membership ranges from individual bloggers and startups all the way through major news outlets. And we have journalists, technologists, academics, students. Everyone's welcome to be a member as long as they're really interested in pushing the boundaries of digital news.
Yeah, and you guys do a really good job of sort of concentrating on new tools and things that people who are working in digital journalism want to take advantage of. I know a few weeks ago I went to a digital camp. What was that called?
Yeah, ONA Camp.
ONA Camp at NPR here in D.C. And I found it really fascinating. And we're hoping to have a couple of the speakers there on the podcast in the next few weeks. But anyway, so what was your involvement with the conference?
Yeah, so as digital director, a big part of my role is organizing the speakers and the programming. So making sure we have really high-quality sessions that bring exactly what you're talking about, the introduction to digital tools or ideas that kind of sort of push what journalism can do in a digital environment.
Okay.
And what's your background? Like, how did you end up at ONA? We need to know a little bit of history here.
Yes. Yeah, so I have a degree from The Ohio State University, and I went on to be a federal...
contractually obligated to say it that way.
Yes, we have to sign that before they give us our diplomas.
Yeah, that's okay.
And then I went to be a federal policy reporter here in Washington, D.C. I took a little break. I worked for a nonprofit as a humanitarian response coordinator in Baltimore for about 5 years. And then for the last 2 or 3 years, I've been working with a group called Frontline SMS. And they had a grant from the Knight Foundation, a Knight News Challenge Award, trying to figure out how SMS and mobile messaging can play a role in journalism. So I was working around the world, doing all kinds of cool consulting projects, basically, with that. And from there to ONA.
So I think, well, I'm not the most excited necessarily about the Muppets, but I'm pretty excited about the Muppets. So, okay, I kind of teased there to give it away. But I'm right to it. What are the big things you guys are planning for this year?
Yeah, so we have three keynotes, and so I guess I'll work backwards. On Saturday, September 27th, which is the final day of the conference, we have a keynote featuring Sesame Workshop. And... probably everybody knows Sesame Workshop, but if you don't, they have been pushing boundaries and innovation for 45 years, which, by the way, is 3 times longer than ONA has been around. It's our birthday. It's our 15th birthday this year. So we have producers and writers from the show and also performers. We'll have Cookie Monster and Abby Kadabi present. But they have done some really amazing work in terms of audience engagement, in terms of mobile design, in terms of building apps. And they'll be talking about... how to reach an audience about, important issues that we face. Children's programming still tackles those issues, just like news outlets have to do. And some of the really cool, engaging work that they've done. And they've seen some really tremendous success. So we're really excited.
I like that approach because there are a lot of other types of communication, other types of businesses where a lot of the tools that we end up using in journalism sort of develop and that people are sort of mastering. So it's nice to bring something in that you might not necessarily think is a news organization that's going to be able to teach us tools and things that we can use.
Yeah, exactly. That was a big goal of mine coming into this role, is that sometimes it helps to hear from other fields so that you can better reflect on your own. Mm-hmm. We can tend to be a little bit myopic when we're always talking about the same issues with the same folks. Mm-hmm. So having these fresh voices is really important.
Yeah. When I told my wife last night that the Muppets were going to be there, she's like, they're not journalists. And then we had a little discussion about the fact that I guess Kermit the Frog was actually a newsman, as was.
That's true.
And Cookie Monster, I believe, might have been a reporter at one time as well.
Gosh.
So, you
but
know.
Now it's not really the Muppets. It's the Sesame Street.
Yes.
But still, you know, same kind of deal.
There's been a split. So, yeah, Muppets went to Disney and Sesame Street remains
a
nonprofit.
Okay, so tell us about Friday then.
Yeah, so Friday evening, we try to do a more relaxed, informal keynote. And we'll have three folks from the New York Times talking about the leaked New York Times innovation report that the full report was leaked in May. And it's just a really fascinating snapshot of what digital journalism looks like in 2014, particularly from a legacy outlet with the sort of depth and history that the New York Times has. Mm-hmm. And so the report's filled with a lot of insight about what competitors are doing, other legacy outlets, new digital properties, but also like how does a paper that's as widely recognized and respected and as storied as the Times start to make a transition to create more and more digital products.
Yeah, we just had Bill Keller on in our last podcast, and we talked briefly about the innovation report. And I hadn't realized that there had been two other innovation reports before it, and he had been the author of one of them. So let's take a little side trip here. What was your takeaway from the innovation report? Because we've talked about this for the last couple of months.
Yeah, for me, I thought that it did a good job of covering some things that, at least from an outsider's perspective, appear as really interesting low-hanging fruit, things that the Times can do now that might create new digital products and properties. But there's also some really big, intense structural changes that I think they'll have to face if they're really going to sort of push themselves into sort of a new digital arena. And how they manage that, I think, is going to be really interesting. And it's part of what we're going to be talking about at the keynote.
Who are going to be the speakers there?
So we'll have Alex McCallum. We'll have Tyson Evans and Amy O'Leary. Amy was one of the co-authors, and the other two are responsible for kind of helping to take this big report now and figure out how they're going to implement some of the changes.
Well, cool. Now let's talk about the first keynote on Thursday. That's actually going to be about something else we've talked about recently on the podcast, the events that unfolded and their impact on media in Ferguson, Missouri. So
yeah,
can tell us about that.
Yeah, it'll be our very first opening keynote. So we're really just diving right in. It's an important topical
issue. Keeping it light.
Yeah, right.
And setting the tone.
We'll be looking at the events that unfolded after the August 9th police shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. And so we will have a mix of local and national reporters who have kind of tried to wrestle with this story, which is both, a tragedy in and of itself, and the protests that followed are, of course, really interesting. But it's also indicative of, unfortunately, a lot of issues that a lot of communities are wrestling with nationally in terms of race relations, power dynamics, police response to peaceful protests, and sort of how the media fits into all that, which is ethically complicated, I think, at this point.
Yeah. So I don't know if anyone, or I don't think you've been to an ONA, have you?
No, I have
conference?
Not.
Okay. So when you go, it's like so packed full of all these different sessions that sometimes people, it depends, like there's a strategy. Sometimes people go in, they'll leave halfway through one to go to another, or I'm kind of wondering how they come up with when the sessions are going to be and what the topics are going to be.
Well, and also I noticed that when I was looking at the schedule last night that on the first day, the first morning, there's actually a presentation for newbies, which I'm probably going to have to go to.
Newbies.
It's a haze. They're going to lock the door.
You?
It's hazing. It's like rush week. Yes.
So tell us how you guys come up with these ideas for different sessions.
Yeah, so in March of each year, we do a public call for ideas. And this year, we had by far the largest amount of ideas that I think we've ever seen, an 80% increase over last year. 360-odd ideas came in through that. And then we pile on ideas from ONA staff, from board members, and a few other folks who just send us ideas. So we had more than 460 topics.
Wow.
And how many sessions are there?
And I don't know the final count because there's a mix of things on our Midway, which is our cool like interactive space on top of our programming and stuff. But there's, we're pushing more than 100 sessions. And so we had an external committee of more than 20 folks, and I can't say enough about them because we didn't expect that volume of ideas to sift through. And we spent 2 months sifting through those ideas, really trying to suss out like what would be the most important kind of things to bring forward at ONA. And they were a volunteer committee. They did such a tremendous job. The chairs were Matt Mansfield from Northwestern and Heather Billings from the Chicago Tribune. And you can see the rest of the committee on the website, which is ona14.journalistsplural.org. And then we had a separate committee, which was a review committee, give a whole fresh set of eyes to the whole thing.
Wow.
And we said, what are we missing? What's not here that should be here? Who isn't speaking that maybe we should think about inviting? And so they gave some more input. So the first group came up with maybe 80% of the program. And then the review committee kind of helped us give some shape and flavor to the rest of it.
I know I hate to ask you what your favorites are, but are there a couple in there that you say, yeah, I'm definitely going to go see because there's something that interests you?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a session on, I think in the last 2 years, at least in recent memory, we've seen an unprecedented amount of startup or startup-ish ideas, meaning like maybe newsrooms are starting their own sort of digital property within them, or maybe there's a whole new distinct entity emerging. So we wanted to kind of have a conversation about what does it take to get something going? What does it take both in terms of the technology and in terms of sort of the human capital or investment, but also some of the softer things? What does a newsroom culture look like? What does it take to create a really dynamic team? So we have a session on starting up a newsroom, and it's going to have Kara Swisher from Recode, Lara Satrakian from Syria Deeply, and Melissa Bell from Vox. And, you know, they're going to, you know, it's three really awesome dynamic women who are going to talk about what it has looked like to start the entities that they work for.
The good, the bad, the ugly. Right?
Yeah. And they are, if you know them, they're a blunt crew. So it should be a really candid discussion.
That'll be good.
Given my background in mobile messaging, I'm really excited. Trushar Bharat from the BBC is coming to do a session on chat applications and what it takes to engage an audience with a chat format. And I don't know about you guys, but I don't ever want another email. And so I think that there's a lot of potential in future and audience engagement with WhatsApp, with SMS, and these kinds of things. And so he's been doing some cool experimental projects over the last year, so he'll be joining us to talk about those.
I'm fascinated by SMS and your experience with that. Can you just talk briefly, again, this is sort of stepping away from the conference, about the applications for that that newsrooms may not even be thinking about?
Yeah, so internationally, SMS tends to be very widely used. It's less so in the U.S. with the exception of sports reporters. They send text messages to players and coaches all the time. It's part of their daily role. But internationally, it's usually used in three ways. It could be used as sort of a crowdsourcing kind of thing, or text us if you see something. So a lot of groups will say there's an election. A lot of groups might say, text us if you see something at the polling station that maybe is, you know, shouldn't be happening. It's closed early. There's ballot stuffing, something like that. Groups will also use it if they have sort of trained citizen reporters or citizen journalists and say, like, send us information on this topic over time as you kind of, you know, see things in your community that are related to this. And then there's also sort of you can share information too, right? So if you have a database of numbers, you can then send, you know, headlines or story ideas or just thoughts out through to people's mobile phones. And because it comes directly to your mobile and it's very personal, you do tend to get a really high response rate in terms of opening that. Similar a little bit to how push notifications are used on smartphones.
Yeah, and I know that like there'll be communities that are doing things like that with the Amber Alerts and around. I don't know if it was WYNC was involved in this, but I know that with Hurricane Sandy, there was a lot of use of that, sort of informing the public about, you know, where they could find gasoline and other things like that.
But is there a whole sort of strategy? I mean, I know you sign up for text messages, but I feel like text messages are almost more personal than if you're signing onto a social network and sort of putting yourself out there to receive information. I mean, is there sort of like a strategy to what you send and when you send it?
Yes, you nailed it. Because a text message is so personal, there was a lot of concern for people who work in the mobile community that we don't want to end up with spam the way that a lot of email feels like spam.
Right.
So the kind of content that goes into an SMS really needs to be high-quality, engaging content and have a specific purpose. And for groups that do that, a lot of people really appreciate it. They really like those messages, or they like the chance to interact and engage. Mm-hmm. But if you're just blasting them with messages, they'll unsubscribe from the service.
Right. Yeah, so it has to be interactive. They have to want to click on the link that's there, right? You have to ask a question or something, or is it like Twitter like that?
It could be like that. If it's something like updates, like Amber Alerts or, you know, things that are extremely important to a community, maybe even just updates on community meetings or things like this, those are very welcome even if they're not technically interactive. But you do really need to keep your audience in mind and sort of segment them so that you're only reaching people who need the types of information that you're sending.
Right.
I had a really interesting experience on Facebook a few weeks ago when Robin Williams died. Mm-hmm. I went to the social media site, and it's just sort of an experiment, and I conducted an informal poll, and I said, "Hey, where were, you know, how did you first hear about Robin Williams' death?" And a whole, you know, we got about, you know, maybe 45 responses from different journalists, and it was kind of interesting. You know, it's informal. It's not completely unscientific, but it was interesting to see how people who were really engaged in news and then also receiving information, especially in her thinking very, very forward about mobile, how they actually did receive a lot of the information. A lot of them did it the same way that we always get information like that. When, you know, oh, somebody in my office told me about it, or, you know, somebody sent me an email. My initial thought when this was going on is a lot of people would say, oh, I got it on Twitter. But quite a number of them got it through push notifications, mm-hmm. or, you know, news alerts from, you know, the Post or the Times and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the way that news is being delivered via mobile is changing so quickly now that it's just sort of a fascinating aspect of news distribution that's going on at the moment.
Yeah, and it's complicated. I don't think a lot of groups have sort of found the right mechanisms. You know, there's a lot of experimentation that's still happening. Mm-hmm. And really, coming back full circle to ONA 14, we have a session on called Push Notifications, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Uh-huh. Because there are, you know, lots of groups who have tried to look at how do we get information to your mobile when it's important. But all of us have had that moment where our phone buzzes, and we say, oh, and we look at it, and it's, you know, news about something that's totally irrelevant to us, a sport right. we don't follow, or, you know, an athlete or an actor that, you know, is maybe kind of outside of our sphere. And for whatever reason, I don't know if it's because our mobiles are so personal, there's that moment of disappointment.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of – but when it's good information, and you're excited to see it, and you do sort of click through that push notification to read the article – so I think, like, how do users come to that information? Should news outlets be trying to predict that? Should users be sort of signing up for different topics that they're interested in? Is there a happy medium? I think that's all being sort of felt out right now in the mm-hmm. community.
Yeah, I'm having this sort of odd experience right now with my landline. I still have a landline. I'm one of those people who pays in it. I'm not exactly sure why. And it used to be when I would get phone calls, when that phone would ring, I would have sort of a thrill because, oh, somebody I want to talk to is going to be on that phone. But 99% of the time, it's somebody trying to sell me something yep. or have me give money. And it's like, you know, I really got to cut that cord. But
it's just constantly disappointing.
Yeah, it's constantly. I need more disappointment in my life. And so maybe that's now that I've said this out loud that I'll go do that. So anyway, to circle back to ONA, you mentioned the Midway. And Megan and I have a stake in the Midway. So tell us a little bit about what that is.
Yeah, so the Midway is an area of the conference that's the sort of innovation playground. It's a chance for people to see new tools that maybe are emerging, a chance to connect with the people who make those tools and ask them questions. And it's also a chance to do some hands-on playing with tools. So this year we're going to have lots of things around mapping and data visualizations. We're going to have a virtual reality booth, which is a chance to kind of see some really innovative work that groups are doing with that. There will be an interactive gesture wall that a group called Norflux is doing. So some really cool, like, sort of cutting-edge stuff takes place there.
And awesome. Then there's our podcast.
Yeah, and then there's us in the corner.
Yeah, we're going to be on the seesaw in the digital playground.
We're coming up with plans. We might have a thing or two up our sleeve.
Yeah, just so we can put our shameless plug in. On Thursday at 3, we're going to be podcasting live, which is going to be interesting. And then on Saturday, I want to say 10, we're actually going to be doing a presentation about how to podcast. So if you want to learn how to podcast, if you want to see how we do what we do, mm-hmm. Come and hear that. So we're really excited about this, actually. So
is there any part of ONA that's going to be streaming? Because I know you guys offer the videos after the fact, but is there any way if you can't make it to the conference, you can take part?
Yes. So of course, we hope to see everyone there, but registration closed yesterday. So if you can't make it to ONA, there will be live video streaming of most sessions. And that will be archived. So hopefully you could still participate live. We'll also have live blogging and hashtags for every session. So you could jump right in the conversation, even if it's remotely.
Mm-hmm.
But if you miss all that, you're really tied up, you can still check out the archives and get a sense of the discussion afterwards.
And that's all at we'll have the link with this on the website, but that's all at the website that you gave before?
Yeah, so ona14.journalists.org.
Or the hashtag ona 2014 or
ONA 14.
Okay.
And you can also follow us at ONA on Twitter.
Isn't there? I know that when I went to the AAN conference, it turned out there was, I think it was a neurological organization would also have conferences over the summer. So they had some issues with their.
We see that sometimes too.
with their hashtag.
Be safe with Twitter, people.
Be safe with Twitter. That's my new motto. Be safe with Twitter. Don't tweet unless you're sober. At the very least. So
what?
Whatever. Let's get this back on track. Sorry. I'm having problems. So anyway, as you said, we actually should have probably had you on a couple of weeks ago so that people who were on the fence could say, hey, I think I'll go sign up, but you can't sign up on it. But it is going to be, in Chicago at the Sheraton Twin Towers or
no? Yeah, so the Sheraton Hotel downtown, it's right off the Loop, sort of between the Loop and Millennium Park.
Now, I know
the Navy Pier.
Now, the woman we've been dealing with the Midway, Erin, put out a request a few days ago for, I think she was looking for food trucks
cool.
to try to be there. Are there any other sort of interesting activities that are going to be to entertain and to enthrall those who are attending?
Yeah, there's all sorts of events happening, some official, some unofficial, so plenty of things to check out. We try to leave a large gap between sessions and at lunch because one of the most important things at a conference, as flattering as it is that people really enjoy our programming, is also just a chance to connect with peers and with other folks.
Yeah.
So we'll have food trucks available within the vicinity to make it really easy to grab a meal and then grab a friend and sit down and talk to folks. We have a reception Thursday for first-timers only. So if it is your first ONA, there are more than 500 first-timers this year.
Wow, oh my gosh.
So just a chance for them to connect and meet others and kind of get a feel for what the conference is like. And then for everyone after that, there will be a reception at Chicago Field Museum.
Oh, neat.
Where they have Sue, which is the largest reconstructed Tyrannosaurus Rex ever. So a chance to kind of take a selfie or, network with some other folks.
Are there any whales there?
Well,
I think there might.
I just was there, but I can't remember.
I think there might be. Very
okay.
exciting.
Megan has a thing for whales.
I do. I love whales.
Okay. Yeah, and the museum will be open to kind of
explore.
Poker,
so,
yeah,
yeah so. I think I went there when I was 6 years old. And actually, okay, this is like super sad. I think I went there on my honeymoon. So
why is that sad? Because you're a dork? This just in.
just shut up. We wanted to make it a very enlightening experience and not just a testament to our love.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That'll be cool to have the reception there.
Yes. And then there's the conference is capped off at the end on with
we have a diversity reception. So it'll be a chance for people to connect and talk about diversity in the newsroom. Earlier in the day on Saturday, we're having an actual program conversation about diversity. Mm-hmm. And then a reception towards the end of the day. And then everything then is capped off by our awards banquet, which is ONA's way of recognizing all kinds of amazing work that's done in digital journalism. And we actually do have cash awards for people. And you can see finalists for the awards are actually available on our website, which is journalists.org. So you can see a lot of the amazing work, and we've linked to it so you can really get a feel for some of the incredible work over the last year that's been done in journalism.
So before we wrap up, I want to ask two questions. First is, what is ONA going to be doing beyond the conference? What's next on your plate?
Yeah, so we do organize other events, so keep your eyes peeled. We should have a few exciting announcements for next year. You can check out our website. We have the ONA camps, which are an opportunity to learn about a single subject, and those are a traveling show, so we have them in different cities. We have digital leadership breakfasts, which are a chance for executives to come and talk about issues that are maybe important on their plates. And we have local groups. So a lot of different areas in the country have local meetups. We have one here in D.C. There's New York, San Francisco, all kinds of places where the local ONA community will get together and they'll talk about issues that are important to them, or maybe just have networking mixers or even meet up at a new space and kind of learn about some of the other organizations in their community. So that goes on year round.
Those are awesome because yes. Then you get to go and usually tour either a newsroom or a space you probably would not have access to otherwise.
And they wouldn't let you in the
door.
They wouldn't hire you.
No, but I mean, like, not only do you get to have an interesting conversation, but you also get to tour and see something you haven't seen before.
Usually. Yeah, no, I can definitely speak about the digital camp I was at a few weeks ago and a few of the ONA meetups I've been to at the Washington Post. I think it was they had a really great one a few months ago, and that's how we got Yuri Victor on our podcast. Is, you know,
they Vox, would, yeah.
And that was, and what was great about that one in particular, and this is even something you sort of touched on, is, you know, a newsroom going digital. I mean, what does that mean? I mean, you know, what do you have to switch? Is it just like you turn on a website and then you hire some guy who's gonna you know, load your content on? I mean, you know, how do you structure the way your newsroom functions in order for it to become a digital newsroom and to be successful in that platform? I mean, that sort of thinking, those sort of ideas are the stuff that's sort of thrown around.
Sounds like there'll be a few seminars on that.
Yeah, there will be a few seminars on that. But like I said, we're going to wrap up. But I did want to ask you, this is going to be a quick turnaround on this podcast. Today, what is the thing, what is the big issue you see right today on that's going on in journalism that interests you?
That newsrooms are facing.
That newsrooms are facing.
Yeah, I think that there's a amalgamation that is happening between mobile content delivery, meaning, you know, information presented in a nice, unified, clear way on a mobile device, and also social media and how that information is shared. And those two things are merging, and I think that some content is viewed through a social media platform itself. Some content is viewed on a mobile site. Mm-hmm. Video is entering into that picture. So how that becomes engaging to folks, I think, is a real interesting challenge. There's not a lack of different innovative approaches to how people are wrestling with this, but I think it's a really important conversation that we're dealing with.
Yeah, and you see the social media platforms in particular, like Facebook, trying to push people off onto their messaging system as opposed to, you know, using messages on their Facebook app or whatever. It just, you know, it seems like they're trying to come to grips with how they're going to make this function. So yes, that's a really important big thing. Yes, you?
I think that's it.
That's it. That's all we have.
I can't believe I'm out of questions, but I think I might be.
Shut up.
At least for right now. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Now,
we're looking forward to it. End of September.
Yeah. September 25th to 27th. Beautiful time to be in Chicago. You know, we have a sellout crowd every year, so it should be really exciting.
Awesome. Lots of people wanting to learn about journalism and share their ideas and come up with some new ideas. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. See you in Chicago. You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing state of digital news. Find more info on us and download other episodes at itsalljournalism.com. This podcast is produced in partnership with the Association of Alternative News Media. Thanks for listening.